Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, and today I'm joined by CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Lorry, covering Kingston's status as a Nature Canada bird-friendly city.
Hello, I'm Christina Lorry, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
The City of Kingston has officially received an entry-level bird-friendly city certification from Nature Canada. To obtain a bird-friendly city status, a municipality must earn points across three categories: threat reduction, habitat protection, restoration and climate resilience, and community reach and education. Certification is awarded on one of three levels: entry, intermediate, or high. The city established a bird team about a year ago to work towards making Kingston more bird safe. Notably, the city held a public poll to name an official bird this past fall, a lively race which ended in a tie between the cardinal and the crow. According to the city, Kingston's application received strong marks, bordering on the intermediate level. Karen Santucci, Director of Public Works and Solid Waste with the city, sat down with CFRC to share more about the city's bird-friendly status. I was wondering if you could just tell us a bit about the city's bird team and the work that's gone into this to get us here.
Yeah, so the city started working on their bird-friendly certification about a year ago. We have a bird-friendly team, which is we've got some very active people on the team. The team consists of some community groups like Little Forests, Master Gardeners, Kingston Field Naturalists, Sustainable Kingston. It includes people from Queens and St. Lawrence. It includes some representation from some different Indigenous groups. So it's a very active team. And we worked together to pull together an application. And the application really looked at a number of different things. It looked at threat reduction. It looked at how to conserve and restore and create bird habitats. And it looked at how do we engage the public. So the city worked on that, but the team also worked together. So the team came together. They did three World Migratory Bird Days this year. One of the groups had got a grant to run one of those Migratory World Bird Days where they did a hedge seminar. So they taught people how to plant hedges, which were great for birds populations as well. So lots of stuff has gone into it. Our application went in. We were certified at the entry level, but we were like 1 point short of intermediate level. So our bird team is working really hard right now to make sure we can gain that point and move us up to an intermediate level for next year.
Awesome. And you just mentioned there, bird team has no plans of stopping. I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about what's in the works and maybe what we're going to see in 2026.
Yeah, so 2026, we actually have a meeting coming up in February to talk about what our goals are going to be for next year. I think what you will probably see is some stuff on light pollution that we'll be working on, some stuff on bird window collisions that we'll be working on, and possibly some stuff on roaming cats. There's a lot that's also happening with the city. So right now the city is working on their official plan. We're working on our natural heritage study. We're working on our forestry management strategy. Out of that will also come our tree bylaw. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that's happening at the city that will go into that conserve, restore, create bird habitat sections of the report. And hopefully we'll see some changes in that in the next year as well.
Awesome. And what can residents do to contribute and keep up with all these developments?
We have a new bird-friendly page on the city's website, which talks about all these different areas and gives residents some ideas of things that they could do to help support birds as well. So we encourage people to take a look at that. Other things they can do is just, you know, making sure they're creating habitat for trees, not letting cats roam. If they're leaving out food, understanding where that best is to go and what quality of food people should be putting out. lots of things they can do, lots of ideas on our website. Lots of work also with little forests, master gardeners, Kingston Field Naturalists. They're always working on things to do with birds, plants. So anyone who's looking to be involved, that's an excellent avenue as well to join in with the community and work on some of these activities with us.
Once again, that was Karen Santucci, Director of Public Works and Solid Waste with the City of Kingston. As Santucci said, the city and their bird team look forward to setting new goals and advancing Kingston's status as a bird-friendly city next year. Learn more about the city's bird-friendly city activities and how to make your home a bird-friendly space at cityofkingston.ca/bird-friendly. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. Over to Dinah Jansen with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, about a near 10% tax rate hike proposed in the 2026 Gananoque budget.
Thank you, Jesse. A draft 2026 budget that would see Gananoque residents pay nearly 10% more in property taxes is forcing council and the community into an increasingly unavoidable conversation about aging infrastructure, rising provincial costs, and what level of service the town can realistically afford. Mayor John Beddoes says the proposed 9.7% increase to the municipal property tax levy, coupled with an estimated 3.8% increase to water and wastewater rates, reflects the cumulative impact of long-deferred maintenance, provincially mandated spending, and limited room to maneuver without cutting services. One of the most significant year-over-year increases comes from policing, with the Gananoque Police Service budget projected to rise 5.13% over 2025. Beddoes has attributed the increase largely to new provincial service levels and training requirements, rather than discretionary local spending, adding council will examine alternative policing delivery models in 2026 to reduce per capita costs. Despite a series of targeted cuts and reallocations, collectively reducing pressure on the tax levy by approximately $416,000 or by 1%, the mayor said the underlying drivers of the budget remain largely unchanged. Council, however, has shown little appetite for service reductions to date. The 2026 capital budget includes $190,000 to replace a sidewalk snowblower, an expense that could be avoided through reduced service standards, but one council has so far chosen to maintain. Looking beyond 2026, Beddoes said council must begin grappling now with long-term capital liabilities, particularly the eventual replacement of the Lou Jeffries Gananoque and the Township of Leeds and Thousand Islands Recreation Center, which is expected to reach the end of its life in approximately 19 to 20 years. Beddoes noted that there is currently no reserve set aside for the arena's replacement. Another option raised by the mayor involves deaccessioning or selling municipal assets that do not support core service delivery, including leased properties, parking lots, or surplus lands. Thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with a story from the LJR reporter for the Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forstell, that provides an update on the ongoing OHIP litigation involving Dr. Elaine Ma.
Thank you, Dinah. As Ontario's Health Insurance Authority moves to appeal a court ruling that acknowledged the exceptional pressures of the COVID-19 pandemic, Kingston physician Dr. Elaine Ma says the motion to request an appeal sends a troubling message to doctors who stepped up during a public health crisis. On Tuesday, December 16, 2025, Ontario's Divisional Court made a decision that partially favored the Kingston physician in a dispute over more than $600,000 in COVID-19 vaccination clinic billings. 2 weeks later, OHIP filed a motion seeking leave to appeal the Divisional Court's decision. Ma organized 48 mass vaccination clinics in Kingston during the pandemic and was later ordered by OHIP to repay $600,962 for alleged billing noncompliance, a decision upheld by the Health Services Appeal and Review Board, HSARB. On judicial review, however, the Divisional Court ruled it was unreasonable to conclude that the COVID-19 pandemic did not constitute an extenuating circumstance and sent the matter back to HSARB to reconsider how much, if anything, Ma must repay. In the motion filed with the Ontario Court of Appeal on Tuesday, December 30th, OHIP argued the court misinterpreted Section 17.5 of the Health Insurance Act, which allows payment in, quote, extenuating circumstances, and raised issues of broad public importance for the administration of the provincial health insurance system. OHIP maintains that the court's interpretation improperly expands both the scope of Section 17.5 and the board's authority and warns that it could complicate future physician billing disputes. Ma emphasized that, for her, the case has always been about accountability and transparency. At a time when Ontario is facing a growing physician shortage and strained public trust in the healthcare system, Ma said the message sent by continued litigation is concerning. Quote, physicians need to know that acting in good faith in service of their communities during a crisis will not be later met with years of punishment.
And thank you to Michelle Dory Forstel for that story. Back to the LJR reporter for CFRC, Christina Laurie, covering a story about the installation of the first peace pole at Breakwater Park.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, local journalism initiative reporter for CFRC 11.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
Kingstonians can expect a new monument in Breakwater Park in 2026, with Council unanimously supporting a request from Kingston's Rotary Clubs for the city's first peace pole. Moved by Councillor Brandon Tozo, the motion highlights the work of Kingston's four Rotary Clubs: the Rotary Club of Kingston, Cataraqui Kingston Rotary Club, Kingston Waterfront Rotary Club, and Kingston Frontenac Rotary Club. Rotary has more than 100 years of history in the city, supporting local organizations through direct service, fundraising, and community partnerships. Rotary is a global network of more than 46,000 clubs worldwide, servicing their communities. Rotary clubs across the globe have installed more than 250,000 peace poles, monuments bearing the message, "May peace prevail on earth." John Farrow with the Cataraqui Kingston Rotary Club spoke before council, explaining what a peace pole entails.
And peace poles have been around for decades, but the goal of Rotary International is the planting of peace poles in communities all around the world. A peace pole is a tangible symbol of Rotary's commitment to peace building. The pole is four-sided and divided into top and bottom halves, making eight panels. One panel is reserved for the sponsoring club or clubs, and this one would say the Rotary Clubs of Kingston. The other panels display the message, "May peace prevail on earth," in seven languages. The ones selected for this peace pole are English, French, obviously, Mohawk, Ojibwe, Mandarin, Portuguese, and Arabic. The Aboriginal languages are the two most common spoken in the area, according to the Indigenous Language Nest, and Mandarin, Portuguese, and Arabic are the most common non-English or French languages spoken in the area, according to City of Kingston statistics. You'll see a little gold plaque at the waist of the peace pole. That is the message in Braille as well for vision impaired.
Councillor Brandon Tozo brought the motion forward, framing it as both a recognition of Rotary Club's work and a forward-looking partnership.
I'm bringing forward a motion that highlights something very special in our community and the people who choose to serve it in the spirit of peace, collaboration, service to that embodied by the Kingston's Rotary Clubs. Here in Kingston, we're fortunate enough not to have one, but four Rotary Clubs. The Rotary Club of Kingston, the Cataraqui Kingston Rotary Club, the Kingston Waterfront Club, and the Kingston Frontenac Club. Collectively, their members give thousands of hours each year to projects to strengthen our cities, support families, help youth, and advance sustainable and community well-being. I think their track record speaks for itself. One of Rotary's longstanding initiatives is the installation of peace poles. These are simple but powerful monuments inscribed with the simple message, "May peace prevail." More than 250,000 peace poles have been installed worldwide in parks, in schools, in city centers, and in places where communities gather. They stand as reminders that peace is not an abstract idea. It's something we build together, one action, one relationship, and one moment at a time. Kingston's Rotary Clubs have asked to partner with the city to install the first peace pole here in Kingston. They have proposed Breakwater Park, working in collaboration with staff, as a motion, a space where residents, students, and visitors come together, where we celebrate our waterfront, and where a permanent symbol of peace would be both visible and meaningful.
With unanimous support from council, city staff will now work in partnership with Kingston's Rotary Clubs to identify a suitable location within Breakwater Park, with a goal of installing the peace pole no later than the second quarter of 2026.
This monster quest will have a positive impact. It will strengthen our partnership with organizations that consistently invest in our community. It adds small but significant symbol of unity in a well-loved public space and underscores Kingston's commitment to being a city that chooses peace in how we live, how we serve, and how we engage with each other.
For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN, Dan Jones, with a story about the possible completion of the Wesleyville Church Restoration Project in 2026.
Hi, I'm Dan Jones with CFWN in Cobourg, Ontario. A big year is in store for the Friends of Wesleyville Village, as interior restoration of their historic church will take place. A 2001 fire destroyed much of the interior. Now a new roof will be installed, followed by appropriate renovations to secure an occupancy permit. Wendy Schroeder with the Friends of Wesleyville Village speaks to the massive projects ahead.
2025 is a really exciting year for us. I think the big word here is momentum. So certainly we did see the door and the windows all replaced in the church this year. And that's, you know, an incredible milestone for us because after the fire in 2021, we had a huge outpouring of community support. And so we've been working behind the scenes since then. But in 2025, we could finally see the fruits of those efforts back in place. So all of the windows have now been restored and replaced. The door and the window above has also been replaced. So that really is coming close to completing the exterior of the church. The next thing that we really had to take a look at in 2025 was the condition of the roof. The roof has been there for quite some time. I don't have the exact year, but I don't think it owes us anything at this point. And so we applied for funding through the ACO, and we were approved. So that means that we'll be able to move ahead with the replacement of the roof. So given that it's the middle of winter, we haven't replaced it yet. However, the contract is in place, and I think it'll start moving along soon. So that's another major milestone for us. And one of the reasons that's a major milestone is that we need to make sure that the roof is watertight before we start any of the major interior renovations. And that's a really big project, so we obviously want to protect what we're working on inside as well.
Now, just speaking of the roof itself, was that damaged in the fire in any way in terms of like smoke damage or flames? Was that damaged?
No, the roof was not damaged in the fire. A lot of the damage, most of the damage was interior. The structure of the building is still sound, and the roof really was spared. So the internal ceiling was affected, but not the roof. What we're looking at in terms of roof repair this year is really just an aging covering. And so we want to make sure that it remains watertight when we finish the interior restoration so that we're not putting, you know, that restoration at risk.
So let's talk about the interior restoration in terms of the goal for 2026. What is the goal this year?
Well, the goal this year, the ultimate goal, of course, is to reopen the church. So we received some very significant capital funding from the Ontario Trillium Foundation. So this is a grant for $154,000 that will see us complete the interior restoration of the church to the point that we can regain an occupancy permit. So we're not talking, you know, every last flourishing detail or everything on our wish list, but we are talking about the basics that are necessary to get that occupancy permit and to welcome the community back. So that really would encompass things like fire separation between the floors, the replacement of that ceiling that I mentioned that was damaged in the fire. So, you know, we're looking at removing the charred lumber, rebuilding the ceiling, new vapor barriers, obviously drywall and plaster wall repairs on the inside. There's going to be repairs to the floor at the entry where the fire occurred. And then, you know, some details as well, like restoring the crown molding, the wainscoting, that sort of stuff as well. So it's a fairly extensive project.
So kind of paint us a picture of what the aesthetics will look like. I mean, when someone walks into the church, when it finally does open, what are they going to expect to see?
So, you know, our ultimate goal is to put it back the way it was. So when they come in, we're hoping that they see the same calm, beautiful blue color throughout. We're hoping that pretty much when they walk in, what they're seeing is the history of Wesleyville Village. This really was sort of the cornerstone of the community. And so we want to put back that feel. We want to return it to the community hub that it once was. So, and really when I say that, what I mean is we're not trying to reimagine this space. We are trying to restore the space.
Wonderful. And do you have an anticipated date of when you want to reopen the church?
So, I mean, that's going to be a moving target, of course. However, the goal, real goal here is that we are looking at a 12-month project timeline starting from December 2025. So really we're aiming to have the church reopened, hopefully, by December 2026. We're in the final stretch. So, you know, when I tell people this is the moment, I think this really is the moment. We've come so far from 2021 in terms of, you know, we've added accessibility to the church. We've, you know, been constantly working behind the scenes, and now we're down to the final stage of the project. And so I think within a year, we should expect to, you know, apply for that occupancy permit and hopefully get people back into the space.
Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
And thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with CFRC's Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
This is the Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Thursday, January 8th, daytime high of 3 degrees, actually feeling a touch warmer at 4. Cloudy conditions, but no snow, rain, or sleet in the forecast. Dry day here in the city of Kingston. Friday, January 9th, daytime high of 4 degrees, feeling closer to 0, so just hovering around freezing, with some periods of rain in the morning, otherwise it'll be gray and cloudy. Saturday, January 10th, daytime high of 4 degrees, feeling closer to 0, so very little temperature movement from Friday into Saturday. 55% chance of rain in the afternoon, otherwise cloudy. Sunday, January 11th, daytime high of 2 degrees, but it's actually going to feel closer to minus 6, possibility of a little bit of snow in the afternoon. And then Monday, January 12th, daytime high of minus 1, but feeling closer to minus 10, quite chilly here in the city of Kingston.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.